Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 14, Brahma's Prayers to Lord Krishna, Text 38. Janata,
Janata.
Eva,
Eva.
Janantu,
Janantu.
Kim, Bahu uktya na me prabho manasa vapusa vacha vaibhavam tava gochara Jananta eva janantu.
Jananta eva janantu.
Kim bahuktya na me prabho.
Kim bahuktya na me prabho.
Manaso vapaso vacho.
Manaso vapaso vacho.
Vaibhavam tava gochara. Jananta eva janantu.
Jananta eva janantu.
Kim bahuktya na me prabho.
Kim bahuktya na me prabho.
Manaso vapuso vacho.
Manaso vapuso vacho.
Vaibhavam tava gochara. Jananta, persons who think they are aware of your unlimited potency, Eva, certainly, Janantu, let them think like that. Kim, what is the use? Bahu uktya, with many words. Na, not. Me,
my.
Prabho, O Lord. Manasa, of the mind. Vapusa,
of the body.
Vacha,
of the words.
Vaibhavam, opulences.
Tava,
your.
Gochara,
within the range. Translation. There are people who say, I know everything about Krishna. Let them think that way. As far as I am concerned, I do not wish to speak very much about this matter. O my Lord, let me say this much. As far as your opulences are concerned, they are all beyond the reach of my mind, body, and words. Translation. Repeat.
There are people who say,
I know everything about Krishna.
I know everything about Krishna.
Let them think that way.
Let them think that way.
As far as I am concerned, I do not wish to speak very much about this matter. O my Lord,
let me say this much.
As far as your opulences are concerned, they are all beyond the reach of my mind, body, and words. Purport. This translation is quoted from Srila Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 21, Text 27. There's no further purport, so I will read the next verse, text 39. Anu janahi mam Krishna sarvam tam vesti sarvadrik tvam eva jagantam nato jagat etan tavarpitam. Please repeat. Anujanihi, please give leave. Mam, to me. Krishna, O Lord Krishna. Sarvam, everything. Tvam, you. Vetsi,
no.
Sarvadrik,
all
seeing. Tvam, you. Eva,
alone.
Jagatam, of all the universes. Nata, the master. Jagat,
universe.
Etat,
this.
Tava,
to you.
Arpitam,
is offered.
Purport. In his Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada has quoted Lord Brahma as follows. My dear Lord, although you are the Supreme Lord of all creation, I sometimes falsely think that I am the master of the universe. I may be master of this universe, but there are innumerable universes, and there are also innumerable Brahmas who preside over these universes. But actually, you are the master of them all. As the super soul in everyone's heart, you know everything. Please, therefore, accept me as your surrendered servant. I hope that you will excuse me for disturbing you in your pastimes with your friends and calves. Now, if you will kindly allow me, I will immediately leave, so you can enjoy your friends and calves without my presence. End quote. The words sarvam tvam vetsi sarvadrik are very significant here. Lord Krishna knows everything and sees everything. And therefore, Lord Brahma did not need to remain in Vrindavan to maintain his personal loving contact with the Lord. In fact, as the creator of the universe, Lord Brahma was somewhat out of place in the simple, blissful atmosphere of Vrindavan. where Lord Krishna was exhibiting his supreme opulences in herding cows, enjoying picnics, playing games, and so on. Upon seeing the intense love the residents of Vrindavan had for Lord Krishna, Brahma felt unqualified to remain there. He was not eager to give up the Lord's association, but he felt it better to return to his personal devotional service in Brahmaloka. Somewhat embarrassed and unhappy over his foolish attempt at bewildering the Lord, Brahma preferred to resume his transcendental loving service rather than try to enjoy the Lord's presence. Translation again. My dear Lord Krishna, I now humbly request your permission to leave. Actually, you are the knower and seer of all things. Indeed, you are the Lord of all the universes, and yet I offer this one universe unto you. So we are coming to the end of the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, which is also the conclusion of Krishna's boyhood pastimes. Until now, he has been given the charge of the calves, which means that he stays close to the Vrindavan village. But from chapter 15, he enters into a new age, and then he's given the charge of the cows. That occasion is celebrated as Gopastami. And then he and his cowherd boyfriends take the cows far from the village of Vrindavan to Govardhan Hill and other places. And inaugurate the dynamic of meeting and separations. When he goes away with the cows, he is separated from the residents of the village of Vrindavan, who meditate on him in his absence. But he also has the opportunity, being far from the village, to have secret meetings with the young gopis at Govardhan Hill, Radhakund, and different places. So, leading up to this event, Lord Krishna had been enjoying a picnic lunch with his cowherd boy friends. And Lord Brahma, the creator or chief engineer of the universe, was astonished. And so he descended on his swan carrier and stole the cowherd boys and calves and kept them in a cave under the spell of some mystic slumber. When Lord Krishna considered the situation, that if he were to return to Vrindavan alone, without the other cowherd boys, and without the calves, then the mothers and other family members of the cowherd boys and even calves would feel anxious at what happened to their children. So Krishna expanded himself into a duplicate set of cowherd boys and calves. And it's described just as every individual has his unique bodily features. No two people are the same. Each individual has his unique mannerisms, tastes, styles, and individual qualities and activities in every respect. So Krishna became exactly like each of them. And the parents and other family members and friends could not detect that there was any difference between them and their original children. But there was a difference internally. Up until this past time, the residents of Vrindavan had felt more love for Krishna than for their own children. And the cows had felt more love for Krishna than for their own calves. But during this 1 year, the residents of Vrindavan, who had Krishna playing the part of their children, loved their children, or so-called children, the same as they loved Krishna. As many of you know, the young damsels of Vrindavan desired to have Krishna as their husband. And so Yogamaya, in the form of Purnamasi, the elderly Brahmani of Vrindavan, announced that this year was a very good year for marriages, and that all the young girls should get married in this year. And thus, she arranged for all of the young girls to get married to the cowherd boys, who were actually Krishna. They actually had their desire to marry Krishna fulfilled. So at the end of the year, towards the end of the year, there was a striking incident that took place. The cowherd men were tending the cows on top of a hill, and in the valley were Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys and calves, not the original cowherd boys and calves, but the ones who were expansions of Krishna. And by now the calves had grown older, and they were not meant to drink the milk of their mothers. They were beyond that stage. They were meant to eat grass like older cows. So the men were on the top of the hill with the cows, and Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys were with the calves in the valley. And when the cows saw the calves in the valley, they broke loose and began to run down the side of the mountain. And the men became very upset because they were meant to keep control of the cows, and the cows had broken loose and run down the hill. And furthermore, when they met with the calves in the valley, who were beyond the age to drink milk from the mother cows, they began to drink the mother's milk, which was also very upsetting to the cowherd men. So the cowherd men, they followed down the hill, feeling very angry and baffled. But when they got to the bottom of the hill and met their sons, who were actually Krishna, they also became overwhelmed with affection and started to embrace their sons and shed tears of love and happiness. And they forgot all about their frustration in the cows breaking loose and giving their milk to the older calves. So when Lord Balaram saw this display of affection, he began to wonder what was happening. Was this the action of some demigod or some magician? Or what was happening? Or was it the display of his Lord Krishna's potency? So at the end of this chapter 13, Maharaj Parikshit is also astonished, because generally people love their own children more than others' children. That is natural. But here, the residents of Vrindavan were loving Krishna more than their own children. And only when Krishna played the part of their children did they love their children as much as Krishna. So Srila Sukadeva Goswami explained that everyone loves his own self most. That is also natural. And our love for ourself will be conceived in terms of how we identify ourselves. If we identify with the body, then we will love our body. And the most people are in that position. They're very attached to their bodies, and they will practically do anything for the sake of their bodies, their bodily comforts, their sense gratification. But Shukadeva Goswami raises the question, so then after one loves one's body, one loves the expansions of one's body, like one's children. And then after loving the expansions of one's body, one loves further expansions of things that give pleasure to one's body and the expansions of one's body. But actually, although we think in terms of the body, our real love is for the soul. Because as soon as the soul leaves the body, we don't care for that body, that dead body. And we love the soul because it is an expansion of Krishna. So the supreme object of love is actually Krishna. And it is natural to love Krishna most. We love our children and family members because they're expansions of our body. And we love our body because it's an expansion of or built upon the soul. And ultimately we love the soul because it's an expansion of Krishna. So our real love is meant for Krishna. And the residents of Vrindavan are on the platform of pure, intense love for Krishna. They are the highest self-realized souls. So Lord Brahma, after a moment of his time, which was a year of earthly time, began to feel nervous that he had made a mistake in trying to steal the cowherd boys and calves in order to, you know, bewilder Krishna, this little cowherd boy, and show his superiority. And when he returned to the site of the picnic 1 year later, Krishna was enjoying the same type of picnic with the same cowherd boys and calves, except they were actually his expansions. And so Lord Brahma, who had intended to bewilder Krishna, himself became bewildered by Krishna. And he was thinking, what is happening? Then he went back to check on the cowherd boys and calves that he had stolen. And he saw they were still there, and then he came back, but then he saw the same ones with Krishna. So he became bewildered, and then Krishna manifested his Vishnu form. He and the cowherd boys manifested themselves as Vishnu, Lord Brahma's worshipable Lord, and displayed all of their mystic opulence. And thus Lord Brahma became bewildered, but he also became humbled, and he realized that although he was playing as a small cowherd boy, Krishna is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And naturally he felt remorseful, repentant for having mistaken Krishna's position, and for having attempted to disturb Krishna's playful, loving pastimes with his friends and calves. And so, in chapter 14, he offers these prayers. And the conclusion of the prayers was text 38. There are people who say, I know everything about Krishna. Let them think that way. As far as I am concerned, I do not wish to speak very much about this matter. O my Lord, let me say this much. As far as your opulences are concerned, they are all beyond the reach of my mind, body, and words. So this is a very powerful statement. Lord Brahma is the first created being in the universe. He's the most intelligent creature in the universe. And he is saying that Krishna's opulences are beyond the reach of his mind, body, and words. With his mind, he engineered the whole creation of the universe. With his body, he performed the secondary creation of the universe. And with his words, he spoke the Vedas. But still, he says that Krishna is beyond his reach. So what to speak of us? We cannot even begin to conceive of Krishna's opulences. As Srila Prabhupada often said, people say God is great, but how great he is, they do not know. We get some sense of how great he is from Srimad Bhagavatam. And of course, it's a little different context, but when we first went to India, we met many people who said, I know all about Krishna. Krishna is my blood. We are born in this. You are new. We are born in this. We know everything about Krishna. You don't have to tell us about Krishna. That really means they don't know much about Krishna. And they don't have much interest in Krishna. Because it's not a matter of intellectual knowledge, it's a matter of association. When we hear about Krishna, we are associating with Krishna. And even if we hear the same thing repeated again and again and again, it's always fresh because it's about Krishna, and Krishna is always fresh, ever fresh. But that knowledge, I know everything about Krishna, is very superficial. As we know, he was born in Gokul, and Vasudev took him across the Yamuna he was born in Mathura, and Krishna took him across the Yamuna to Gokul, and so on. But the Bhagavad Gita uses the word tattvataha in several places. Tattvataha means truth, in truth, not just superficially. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tattvataha. That if one understands the transcendental appearance and activities of Krishna in truth, taktva deham purna janma naiti mameti so arjuna. He never has to take birth again in the material world, but he comes to Krishna. And similarly, bhakti mama bijanati avanyoveti tattvataha, that only by devotional service, Krishna says, only by devotional service can I be known in truth, tattvataha. So we have to serve the Lord. Then he reveals himself, as we discussed last night. Atasi Krishna namadi nabhavetgram indre sevan mukhi hi jivado swayameva spuratrata. That Krishna reveals himself, the transcendental nature of his holy name, forms, qualities, pastimes, and opulences to one who serves him. So bhakti mam abhijanati, he can be understood only through bhakti, devotional service. And as we approach Krishna through devotional service, we become increasingly aware of two aspects of Krishna, his opulences, vaibhav, and his sweetness. And in Lord Chaitanya's discussions with Srila Sanatana Goswami, he discusses the opulences of Krishna and the sweetness of Krishna. And as aspiring devotees of Krishna in Vrindavan, we must be conscious of both. Sahajiyas, they're conscious of the sweetness but not the opulences. I mean, they're not really conscious of the sweetness in its purity, but at least superficially. And therefore, devotees are advised to read Srimad Bhagavatam from the beginning, from the first two cantos, and gradually progress to the 10th canto, which describes Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Because if they don't appreciate Krishna's opulences, they might think he's an ordinary person. But if we don't get to the 10th canto, if we don't come to the sweetness of Krishna, then we may be devotees of Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha, but we will not have entry into the sweet, intimate pastimes that exist between Krishna and his pure devotees in Vrindavan. But we must be conscious of both, as Srila Prabhupada was, as all of our acharyas were. And know that he is all-pervading. He is sarvadrik. He sees everything. He's with us at every moment. He's within our hearts as the super soul, and he's within the atom. He's in the spaces between the atoms. He's everywhere. So we are never alone. And if we surrender to him, then we have his merciful protection wherever we are. Every day we sing, Ito Nishinga Parato Nishingo, Yato Yato Yami Tato Nishingo. Nishinga Dev Krishna is everywhere. Ito Nishinga Parato Nishinga. He is here and he is there. Yato Yato Yami Tato Nishinga. Wherever I go, Nishinga is there. By here, Nishinga. He is outside Hridaye Nishinga, and he is in my heart. Nishinga Madhyam Sharanam Prampadye. So I take shelter of Lord Nishinga, Krishna. So we have to have that faith. Otherwise, there is a disconnection between our practical lives and Krishna Leela. We think Krishna Leela are very nice stories. We get the children's version and read them to our little ones. And it is all very sweet. But in our practical lives, we don't actually have faith that Krishna is with us, that he will protect us, he will maintain us. We are worried. Who will protect me? Who will maintain me? How will I protect myself? How will I maintain myself? Because we're not fully cognizant of Krishna's opulences. We're not conscious that Krishna is everywhere. All knowing, all seeing, all powerful. And he is our best friend. Someone may be very powerful, but if he's not your friend, his power won't help much. There are a lot of rich people in Texas and other places, but it doesn't do us any good because they're not our friends. Many powerful people doesn't do us any good because they're not our friends. But Krishna is the richest and the most powerful, and he's our friend. Srila Jiva Goswami has analyzed why a person should surrender to Krishna and engage in service to Krishna. And he says that one reason is because God is great and we are small. So the small should serve the great. Another reason is it's our constitutional position. Jive Swarupai Krishna Nityadas. We are part and parcel of Krishna, and it's the natural position of the part to serve the whole. So we should serve Krishna because it's our constitutional position. But then he says that another reason is because of Krishna's affectionate dealings and merciful protection of his devotees. And he said that is the best reason why we should surrender to Krishna and serve him. So when we read or hear Krishna's pastimes in the 10th canto, how he protects his devotees. Throughout the Vrindavan Leela, we read about so many demons coming to attack, and how Krishna protected his devotees and in most cases killed the demons or banished them. So we should think, oh well, if I surrender to Krishna, if I become a devotee of Krishna, I will get the same kind of protection. Not that, oh, these are nice stories, Krishna killing the demons in Vrindavan, and that here I am in the material world, and that's something else, and this is something else. But we should think, no, all of the love that he gives to the residents of Vrindavan, I could also get that love if I become his devotee like they are. All the protection and care that he gives them, I can also get from Krishna if I also surrender to him and become his devotee. It's the same Krishna. So we should hear with the consciousness that it's the same Krishna in Vrindavan, and the same Krishna in my heart, and the same Krishna within the atom, and between the atoms. And that if I surrender to him like the residents of Vrindavan, I'll get the same affectionate care. And there's no question that, oh, they're very exalted. Who am I? They're so high, I'm so low. This is our constitutional position. It's true that our pure existence, our original spiritual nature, is covered by this body, this senses and mind. But that's not us. We are the soul within, and that soul is by nature pure and beautiful and Satchitananda Vigraha, and full of love. And we are meant, we exist to serve Krishna, to give Krishna pleasure, to increase Krishna's pleasure. And because each of us is individual, eternally, each of us will have our own unique way of serving Krishna and pleasing him. And if we don't realize our eternal relationship with Krishna, Krishna will be deprived, if you will, he'll be deprived of that unique personality who we are, and that unique service that only we can offer in our purified, liberated state. So we are meant for this. Krishna wants us to come back to him. So we just have to follow the process. We just have to follow the process. But actually, we do, because we're ordered to do so, but it's actually the mercy of Krishna and the Vaishnavas that makes us advance. It's not our efforts. Our efforts are not capable of really making us advanced, but our effort to follow the process will move Krishna and his devotees to be merciful to us, and they will pull us towards them. They'll pull us out of this material entanglement, material quagmire, and pull us to them, which we cannot do on our own. But they will do it for us. But we have to make the effort to follow their instructions, to give ourselves to them, to the process of serving them. And then they will do the rest. So, faith, I mean, adoshraddha, alaya faith. But real faith, if we, you know, adoshraddha, real faith in Krishna, then we can really surrender and really take up the process. And then everything else will follow. Hare Krishna. Yes, Narottam. Narottam, the best, the uttam of the Naras, best of men.
Guru Maharaj just asked me, are you Narottam or are you Narottam?
Good question.
Maharaj, thank you for your wonderful talk. My question had to do with us going to Vrindavan. And it's mixed with an example that I read recently from one of Satyaraj Prabhu's books.
Are you talking about Boma Vrindavan or Goloka Vrindavan?
Boma Vrindavan here. And my experience was when we went together, when we were with our Guru Maharaj, and we did this amazing parsons and the BIHG and all of these different activities, the atmosphere was just amazing. Just amazing. And I developed this like intense desire to always want to be there, to go there. You know, it was just a remarkable experience for me in my spiritual life. And but then after his disappearance, after our Guru Maharaj's disappearance, I had gone back to Vrindavan, but I didn't feel the same way. I felt very much devoid of that, you know, taste, that experience, even though I was in association with many advanced devotees. And then recently I read this history of Srila Narottam Thakur, who never returned to Vrindavan. And even he sings this song that, you know, why go to the Dham when all you need is the name, all you need is Govinda. And I was shocked to see that he never returned there on Narottam Thakur. And I was just, you know, contemplating that, wondering, because when I returned there, the experience was so much different without him. I was wondering if you could comment on that and maybe help me with that. I mean, to me, it indicated so much dependence and importance to the Guru. And my Guru Maharaj, he really emphasized the Shiksha Guru relationship to me. He specifically introduced me to so many of his godbrothers and, you know, to for Shiksha. But the experience was so much different. That's why I wanted to ask your guidance and some.
I'm not sure exactly what your question is.
My question has to do with taking shelter in Vrindavan, and the how to, right now I'm feeling devoid of that higher experience that I had at that time. So, it may be offensive, it may be so many things, but I was just wondering if you had some insight into this.
Well, we should accept whatever is favorable and reject whatever is unfavorable. And what's favorable under certain circumstances may not be as favorable under other circumstances. One practical question that comes to mind is when you went to Vrindavan after Gurudev left, what did you do? Because when Gurudev was there, there was structured activities of VIHE and going on parikrama. So it's just a thought that crossed my mind that if you came and submitted yourself to a sort of structured, intense program, such as VIHE, Rajamandala Parikrama, the Varshana Japa Retreat, the Govardhan Retreat, you might experience more of that sweetness that you experienced in Gurudev's presence. Just my own experience of devotees who do submit themselves to that austerity. They come from many different categories, with gurus, without gurus, all just, but the being sort of forced out of your comfort zone, to do things that not only do you not usually do, but are not easy to do. You get special mercy. You get special mercy. Of course, one's own guru has a very powerful influence on one's consciousness, one's mood. But it is a transcendental process, and we're dealing with an eternal relationship between an individual soul and the Supreme Soul. And there really cannot be any impediment or lack. That said, Anukulyasya Sankalpa Pratikulyasya Varjanam, it may not be the right time for you to spend. I would definitely say that there's a difference between there could easily be a difference in the experience of someone who comes and enters a very structured, intensive program, as opposed to coming and certainly chanting, hearing, associating with advanced devotees, visiting holy places, praying, that will be there. But if, you know, it's not clear from your question if you, like if you want to go back and try to experience more of what you experienced earlier, or if you're thinking you shouldn't go back, like Narottam Das Thakur, and just, but, you know, Narottam Das Thakur, of course, he's the Acharya, so we can learn from his example. But he was chanting the pure name. If you chant the pure name, you're in Vrindavan wherever you are. But it's really to the extent that we can experience Vrindavan through our chanting of the holy name would probably be proportionate to the quality of our chanting. Of course, it could be said of going to Vrindavan as well, that your ability to experience Vrindavan is it in proportion to your surrender to Vrindavan. According to Shastra, the value of your devotional practices is multiplied in the Dham. So, you can chant in the Dham. It's not like you go to the Dham or you chant. You can chant in the Dham. But it is individual, it is a matter of time. You know, maybe for now you're meant for another type of service or another type of internal work, and you know, maybe it's just not the time.
If I duplicated what I did, I still notice like there's a difference. You know, going to the classes, doing everything we're doing, and then so what's coming into my consciousness, into my mind, is that to increase whatever I did, to increase, like you said, take the extra trouble, do something more. To me, it's like at this point, really doing something for others. Like that, what I'm experiencing is that always, I was doing something for myself in the sense that I was going to the courses for myself. I was going on the parikrams for myself. I was, serving for myself. And now, but I'm duplicating that, and it seems to be, devoid of that taste. There was an initial freshness and excitement, a wonderful experience. But so that's what's coming to me now from hearing from you, is that if I was more, doing it for others, or to help others, or in some way extending that mercy, I'm feeling that would be something more. Because when we're there, constantly chanting, constantly reading, constantly worshiping.
That's a very good point. Very good point. The mood of service. I've also experienced that even at japa retreats, that if I'm in the mood of myself, it's not the same. But if I'm in the mood of service to others, so that's good. Maybe you should take groups to Vrindavan. I mean, you're a great storyteller. You can take your own groups. Introduce them, of course, to advanced devotees who are there, and also take them and tell them about the pastimes and the philosophy. Maybe that's the next step. Well, taking care of your children is your service. I agree with you. If someone thought that it has happened that devotees have thought that it was more important to do service in the temple, and then they neglected their children and their children suffered, that could be a misconception. That could be a misconception. But it is your service to take care of your children so they become good devotees and good human beings. There's a very powerful letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote to one mother who was... had been engaged in deity worship, but it was hard for her to do the deity service because of the child. And Prabhupada wrote that your service now is child worship, not deity worship. Gopal?
Thank you also very much, Yuraj Maharaj, for this class. You speak about having faith in Krishna in your everyday lives. In any case, I was wondering, should a devotee take those steps of allowing Krishna's shelter as his best friend only in accordance to his actual realization or growth in spiritual life, or should he, even though he may not have that complete faith, should he make decisions in his life expecting, but maybe with a little bit of reservation because he still hasn't developed complete faith or love for Krishna, but should he still more or less enter the mouth of the Agasura demon instead of pursuing the technique, if you will? Does that make sense?
It does.
Sometimes we have concerns about money matters and things like that, and we choose to allow ourselves to become overwhelmed with these ideas rather than to accept our, you know, more intense practice in our sadhana bhakti or service at the temple.
Well, it's a gradual process that gradually we develop more faith in Krishna. gradually we have more taste for chanting and hearing about Krishna and associating with devotees, and we gradually lose taste for more mundane of activities and more mundane association. But as Srila Prabhupada said, being a devotee doesn't mean a challenge to the laws of nature. He gave the example that if you're in the jungle and you know there's a tiger, then you shouldn't go there thinking, oh, I'm a devotee, Krishna will protect me. It's not a challenge to the laws of nature. So we do our duty. It's a very important instruction in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. We do our duty. If we are in Grihastha Ashram, it's our duty to earn a living and support our family members. But our main aim should be to be Krishna conscious. And there's also atyahara. I mean, there are many obstacles that we create, you know. Atyahara prayasascha prajalpaniyam agraha. So, like over-endeavoring for material things that are hard to achieve, that's one of the items that sadbhi bhakti vinashyati. It's one of the items that destroys our bhakti. Eating too much or collecting too much. You know, those are items that can spoil our devotional service. But we should, you know, it may not be a sudden, abrupt change, but there should be a gradual progress. We should perceive a gradual progress, developing more faith in Krishna, being in less material anxiety, having more taste for chanting and hearing and serving in the association of devotees, losing taste for mundane association and activities. It's gradual. But at a certain stage, there can be a, they say, like a quantum leap, where it, like, all those little increments add up, and then you like reach a stage where you sort of go past feeling anxious. Doesn't mean you don't, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates, that like Srivas Thakur would not work. He just did not want to work. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Srivas Thakur, you are a grihastha. You have to work. How will you maintain your family if you don't work? If you're not going to work, you should take sannyas. And Srivas Thakur replied, no, I am not fit for sannyas. And Mahaprabhu said, well, then you have to work. He said, no, can't work either. So then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, well, then, you know, if you don't work, how will you maintain your family? And then Srivas Thakur tapped his hand 3 times. Mahaprabhu said, well, what does that mean? And he said that Krishna has promised to provide what his devotees need. And if for three times he doesn't provide, then forget what he said, I'll drown myself in the Ganga. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I am very pleased with your mood of surrender, and I am Krishna himself, I am Vishnu, the husband of the goddess of fortune, and I promise, that from this day forth, the goddess of fortune will always reside in your home, and neither you nor your family members or your servants or your pet animals will ever know any want or scarcity. So, yes, it's a matter of faith, and one should act according to one's position. One shouldn't be reckless. One shouldn't imitate someone on a higher platform, but at the same time, if we don't push ourselves to go beyond our present position, how will we go further? But push means, it's not like pushing in the usual sense. Push means to associate with more advanced devotees, to go deeper in Krishna consciousness.
Also, in part with that question, until one actually achieves the level of faith, maybe as Srivasa Thakura, is it considered then that without that complete faith, you're still committing some offense to the whole name? Until one rises to that level?
Well, the offense is, to not have complete faith in the chanting of Hare Krishna and to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions on the matter. So if you're chanting with the mood to be purified, we have material attachments, But if you're chanting in the mood to be purified, that you want to be free from those attachments, that's not an offense. They're there, but you're chanting to be freed from them. You're praying to be freed from them. But if externally you're chanting, but internally you're holding on to them, then that's an offense. That's an offense. And being freed from the attachment doesn't mean that you can't deal with whatever it is. It just means that you will deal with it without attachment. Say, whatever it is, a wife, a child. Now, if there's no material attachment, and you're motivated out of pure love, then you'll actually be able to deal with them better. Doesn't mean that we reject them, but that's yukta vairagya, anasatasya vishayan, that the first element in yukta vairagya is anasatasya vishayan, without attachment for the objects of the senses. So it's really when we're detached that we can use things properly in Krishna's service, or engage things properly in Krishna's service, and that applies to, wife, husband, children, other family members and associates. Because then you can really think of what's good for them. As long as you have material attachments, lust, as long as you have lust, you're thinking, what can I get from the person? You're serving them, but it's sort of not pure service. You're serving them, but you really want to get something for yourself from them. But when you're really, you know, free from material attachment and you're like more attached to Krishna and Krishna consciousness, then you can relate to them purely out of real love and care for them without it being mixed with you're trying to fulfill your own desires through them. So it'll be good for your relationships. Not only with Krishna, but with everyone. Yes, Nilamata?
And after this question, that Lord Brahma stole the cows and the cows and kept them in the cave. And he asked this question, you know, the offense that Lord Brahma committed to the cowboys and the cows, is it higher than the offense committed by Lord Indra sending the thunder and the rain and the flood to the prejudices. So, if he answers this question, of course, the answer is made that in this situation, Lord Brahma, stealing the cow, he actually separated his devotees, Lord Brahma separated the devotees of the Lord by separating them, by putting them in the cave. But in the sense of Lord Indra, he actually brought everybody together to be with Krishna. So he said the offense of Lord Brahma is higher than the offense of Lord Indra, because Indra brought everybody closer to Krishna in front of him, kept them away from everyone. So I just want to make a comment.
Okay, thank you very much.
Also, one part also of the Narottamguru, the town situation. My previous years that I went to Mayapur was very sweet, you know, to go and do the parikram. The going to the parikram, it's really nice to get absorbed with the association of Vaishnavas. You come back, of course, your foot is sore, really nice, but that's how it gets sore, you know, it's a whole purification, you feel really relished. But the last trip that I went to Mayapur, after that, after all this beautiful pastime, for the next last trip that I went, I went in a situation where I had to deal with the apartment that I bought in my court. I knew what I was getting into. And so when I went to the dam, I've been dealing with persons that I bought the place financially and that, and many people want to be careful and maybe you'll get to talk. All the stuff, and, you know, for a certain penny counts and all the luxury of the investment place. So when I went back, I knew when I went back, it was one of the, you know, it's a work for me time. So I went 2 weeks before work for me, and I had to deal with legalities and getting my papers, and, you know, I sent all the money to the bank. And then when I went there, I said, okay, I paid everything, so I need the papers. She said, don't worry, I'll send it to you when you go back to America, it'll be all done and that. And I was a little bit nervous, you know. And, I know a few people, it's not my hometown, and, you know, so I'm trying to figure out. She gave the key to the apartment, and I know what bedrooms and prepare them. And the next time when I come, I can, you know, use the place and you know, perform my devotion service. But the whole trip was just anxiety, trying to get, you know, it was bikini, trying to get friends to go by the bedding and fix the place a little bit and all that. And at the end, anyway, 2 weeks went by, a lot of my friends from Malaysia, people I went to a few parikrams, I didn't do the whole parikram which I usually do. So I was feeling very disturbed one day when the temple room after the whole thing was dealt. And found Bhagavad Gita from him, and he helped me with the legality. He talked to the, I said, can you translate on Buddhist disappearance later? He told me that the lawyer was our God brother, and asked him and he would help him. He called that person and he gave the papers to him 30 minutes. He's working in Bengali and dealt with the whole thing and got all the papers in 30 minutes. Then I went to the temple room. It's all good. Yeah, externally it seems so material, but it's a future investment for my spiritual life. But then I went to the temple room and I said, Krishna, look, all this Vaishnava, they are worshipping the thoughts, they are worshipping the deities. Here I'm being truly, all I'm doing is weddings and legal papers. And, you know, my brains are all, you know, all so material here. You know, I feel so bad that I came here and didn't do any service, and I feel really, you know, so fallen here, and looking at all these duties, I felt really down, you know. Just, and I was changing my arms, and I'm feeling like that. And just as I was changing, somebody came by to me and said, I want Mataji, are you second initiated? I said, yes, Mataji. And then he said, I'm on Krishna Maharaj's cycle and I'm second initiated. So you need some help in the puja room. So, and then she took me to the puja room and asked me to come to the temple altar at around 6 o'clock in the morning. And then, just then they did the, you know, the Mahabhishek of Panchatattva, the second time I paid the duties and stuff like that. So they had all this big, all this tall jewelry, all this long jewelry, and she gave 2 hours of service to organize the colors of the, of the jewelry. And I became so blissful that, you know, watching them in the office, listening to me. And after that, I went to the pujari and said, thank you so much for giving me the service. And hey, why did you come here? And then at the back, they all day brought Krishna's plate. And said, can you go in the kitchen and wash Krishna's plate and take all the maha? So I went to the kitchen and washed Krishna's plate. And got all the maha and I got to distribute to my God, sisters and God brothers. And Krishna's really kind. So it's just our mood, I guess, you know. We go there in the mood of service and Krishna. Feel fallen and feel that with your mercy, then Krishna hears our prayers. So, hopefully, in praying in Mayapur, gets married this year. I told my husband I'm going to stay in Mayapur for a whole year with the rest of the group. I just want to hear and study Prabhupada's and thank you, my sadhana, for a whole year. Because I've been working really hard, which really, and I told my husband to take a break. So he said, go ahead. And he's going to follow and preach here for the St. Patrick's Day and St. Anthony preaching and Pentecostal preaching. And I said, let me pray for you too. I just want to use the Dhamma. I just want to hear you chant. Hopefully, by your blessings and worship, March.
Hi, Bo. Wonderful.
Like, or over endeavor phase
I mean, it's important to chant 16 good rounds. So you should try to organize your life in such a way that you can. But sometimes circumstances, you know, demand your attention in other areas. So there are many details that each individual has to work out for himself or with his family or with members or with, you know, friends who have been in similar situations. But Prabhupada emphasized not making one's life too complicated. And sometimes it's a very subtle question. You know, sometimes someone could be ambitious, but it's at the expense of his spiritual practices. You know, I think the story that Nila Madhava Mataji told is very instructive, because for a period she was involved in material activities, but the material activities were meant to be an investment in her spiritual development. And then in the end she got some quite immediate reciprocation and encouragement. But she was conscious while she was making the endeavor, although she was lamenting, but she was conscious that she was making the effort for her future spiritual development. So it's sort of an individual matter. Some devotees have consciously decided, this is how much I need, I don't need more. So, you know, I'll earn what I need and keep my life simple so I can have more time and energy for my spiritual practices. But it could be that someone feels he can really do more. Like he can, in the long run, he can be better situated spiritually if he makes more money, say. And if one is really sincere in that and keeps that goal in mind, that would also be a valid course. But to be sort of in a mode of panic and like feeling overwhelmed, I mean, that can also happen temporarily, but that like feeling overwhelmed, you could feel overwhelmed. We all can feel overwhelmed, but we should have a sense of what we need to do to come out from being overwhelmed, and we should feel, you know, sort of like you're buried under an avalanche, but have to like gradually, one by one, take the rocks off so I can get out of it. So you should be, you know, pretty systematically removing the rocks, and as you remove the rocks, feel like you're not under such a crushing weight. And there should be some, temporarily one could be totally overwhelmed and confused, but shouldn't last too long. Yes.
Just a question on this point. I remember there's a dialogue with Sri Prabhupada and Maharaj, and he's crying to Prabhupada. And he was, that time, many of the senior men had taken sannyas and they wouldn't preach, and he had so much to do. And he was just crying like he was struggling to chant his rounds. And he was saying, you know, it's so, when Prabhupada was laughing, and Prabhupada saying to him that, I'm sure you're familiar with that exchange. So, at a certain point, it seems to be, you know, a tremendous amount of mercy also to have that, you know, load, that responsibility, you know, but to actually muster up, like you're saying, strength. I was wondering if you could comment on that, because that seems to be another side of this point.
The burden that Tamal Krishna Goswami accepted was direct service to Srila Prabhupada. And you know, I think the main thing is with one's sincerity of purpose. He was very sincere in his mood of service to Srila Prabhupada. But it's everything is a matter of proper adjustment. Because I remember once Tamal Krishna Goswami said to Srila Prabhupada in Juhu that he knows the Bombay municipal codes better than the verses of the Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada said, that is not good. So it's, Prabhupada was always doing that with us individually and collectively, like steering us in one direction, and if we're like going too far, then he'd bring us back the other way. So we always have to do that. You know, we might get sort of too absorbed, you know, in a matter of speech, too absorbed in our own chanting and hearing and neglect other things, and we have to pay more attention to the other things. And we might get too absorbed in the other things and neglect our chanting and hearing, and then we have to come back to that. So it's always, it's not like a straight line, it's not so simple. It's like sailing a boat, you know, you catch the wind and it takes you that way, but then you have to slightly change your tack and come back that way. And so it's a little zigzag, but it's going in the desired direction, ultimately. So we always have to make adjustments. All right, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.